Commission on Aging, March 21st. The March 21st meeting of the Commission on Aging will come to order. You've all reviewed the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? You've reviewed the minutes from February 21st. Is there a motion to approve or changes to be made?
I move.
Second.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? The minutes are approved. We do not have a Public Health Advisory Committee meeting update tonight, but we do have an update from Pat Janik on the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities.
Yes, Hugh, I did write up the highlights of the meeting, and you all have a copy of what went on at the Advisory Council for Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities. I just want to point out the Senior Lobby Day was a really big success. They had some really wonderful meetings with legislators, and they shared a lot with them. I also listed some of the legislative bills, particularly that they have been legislating for and looking at. It seems like some of the budget requests are going quite well. Another thing that was brought up, and that you've probably seen in the paper, is the closing of the Furstenberg Meal Site, which is going to be happening. I know from the paper it said there's only an average of 14 people that go for the day. And so it is a real concern of money spent for services gotten. It does not mean, to my understanding, that people who receive home-delivered meals, that would be taken care of in another way. But obviously there's still things going on about that. And then we saw a demonstration on a new website that possibly the AAA may put into effect called Active Daily Living, which is a caregiver resource, an online caregiver resource. And there should be more information coming out on if they decide to do that and how to access it. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Pat?
So that is that a prototype now, or is that an active site?
It is not an active site here. It is a prototype that they could use to put here if that is what is decided.
Okay.
And it had a lot of resources, both for if you were an individual and you wanted to, if you had questions about your own condition or what to do or whatever, or if you're a caregiver and you're looking for resources to help somebody else.
Thank you. We're now moving to our focus on supportive services. The purpose of this year's focus is to educate, raise awareness, and advocate for supportive services that exist or may need to exist to help Clark County's older citizens age in their own home and their own familiar neighborhood for as long as they can. While our primary focus will be on supportive services, we will continue to advocate for the housing recommendations that we made to County Council on February 21st. And we've heard since then that the county has embraced those recommendations and are exploring possibilities to develop specific policies following our recommendations. So it is great interest that we follow that and participate in it as needed. We also have been invited by the cities in Clark County to go to them and present our recommendations to them. And we're very pleased to have been invited and look forward to that. And we hope we will be invited also to speak to their planning commissions. In all our endeavors, your participation is invaluable. After our speaker's presentation and interaction with the members of the commission, we will be asking you for your comments and questions. Tonight's speaker is going to talk about caregiver resources, and Pat Janik knows Lexi very well. Would you like to say some more to introduce our speaker?
Yes, I would. So Lexi has agreed to come and talk with us tonight. She is the Community Service Program Coordinator with the Area Agency on Aging and Disability of Southwest Washington. So she's very familiar with not only their programs and services, but also all of those in our community. She's worked with that agency since 2006, first actually connecting people with services and resources, and now coordinating the Family Caregiver Support Program and Senior Health and Wellness Programs. She has experience in her own life of helping her aging family members with all the issues and the need for resources. She's been in our area for a long time, coming here as a fairly young child and graduated from WSU. So she's very familiar with what is going on here, and I'm sure we're going to learn a lot from her. Welcome, Lexi.
From the agency, so a brief overview of the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington provides services to seniors.
Do you want to pull the microphone a little closer to you?
Sorry, is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, so my agency, we provide services and resources to seniors, adults with disabilities, and family caregivers. We're one of 13 area agencies on aging in the state of Washington, and there is an Area Agency on Aging serving virtually every county in the United States. And so a lot of the programs and services that I talk about are offered to some extent throughout the country. It's just communities are different based on funding, based on priorities, things like that. And so today I'm going to focus more specifically on our caregiver resources portion of what our agency provides as well as what's available in the community. So the first thing is, who are caregivers? And the difference is kind of between paid caregivers and unpaid caregivers. So my program is very specific to unpaid family caregivers. And those are people who are providing any form of care to a loved one. It can be a family member, it can be a neighbor, it can be a friend, it can be a church member, and not being paid for those services. The majority of clients who kind of access services through our agency are spouses and adult children. This program is not age specific, it's 18 plus, and so we provide those services to all caregivers along that spectrum. The difference there is it's often confused with paid caregivers. And so a lot of people hear about home care agencies and caregivers in the community, people who are getting caregiver assistance from the state, things like that. Those caregivers are paid, and so they're not eligible for this program, they're eligible for other programs. And so those paid caregivers, you can be a paid caregiver through the state, home care agencies, or individually hired. And there are specific training requirements, a background check, so there's a process for all of that. So through our agency, through a different program, there's a contracting process that paid caregivers have to go through. And these are state guidelines set that include background checks, and initial training, and then continuing education each year. It's a very strict process. If caregivers don't follow that training process, they are terminated from being paid to be a caregiver. And that's the same for caregivers through agencies, as well as individual providers through the agency, through our agency. And so one of the big differences in-house is those programs, there's not a lot of overlap. There's some very unique situations that we have run into where people can access both programs, but generally that's pretty separate. So just some numbers, because I know people like numbers to have, is family caregivers in the United States. According to AARP, and these numbers are a couple years old, so they're higher than this, is there were about 40 million family caregivers throughout the United States. They were providing 37 billion hours of care, and that if you use the numbers of how caregivers were paid, it equated to about $470 billion that they were providing care, and no compensation for that care. So that's some pretty big numbers for the United States. For Washington State, We currently have about 828,000 family caregivers. And again, providing $10.7 billion in care. And there was a study done in about in 2014 that the estimated care that they were providing is they saved the state about $10 million in care for people who would have otherwise either been placed in a facility or been accessing Medicaid services. So that's a savings here in Washington that it's been a big difference in Washington State. One thing that I'm going to go into is we are very unique in Washington State of the services that we provide to caregivers and how we provide those caregivers, those services. And so things are that you hear about from Washington, they're not going to be the same for other states because we do them a little bit differently here. And accessing caregiver services, a number to have is of those 828,000 caregivers, formal services that are offered by the state, only a little over 3,000 caregivers are accessing those services. And that's primarily because people do not identify themselves as being a caregiver. Or those who do identify themselves as being a caregiver have a stigma for accessing services. Our program, we do receive state and federal dollars, and so a lot of people assume that it's a state program, it's financial assistance. And so there is a stigma to accessing that. Something we always work on and are always providing those services, but that's some of the reasons why not very many people are accessing those. So here in Clark County, our family caregiver support program, our agency, we currently serve about 277 caregivers through formal services, and 165 of those are here in Clark County. With those, looking at those really high numbers for the federal numbers and those low numbers, we are actually the third highest county with how many caregivers that we are serving right now, behind King County and Pierce County. So we do, even though that number may not sound like a lot, that's pretty high for the state of how many caregivers we are actually able to serve. So kind of, how do we help serve them? So through our agency, we have a lot of programs and pieces of our family caregiver support program. The first thing, like any program within our agency, the first step is information and assistance. This is one of my favorite programs because this is the program that I've served in for 8 years before my current position. And so really what our information and assistance specialists do is they are trained to ask the right questions and to be able to guide people to the services that are available, whether they're in-house or in the community, and help them get connected to those resources. And so one thing that I always let people know is more often than not, when you call our agency and ask a question, you're gonna get a question response. It's not so we can be annoying, it's so we can direct you to the most appropriate service. One of the favorite stories that I had is when I was on the phone, I had a woman who called and was looking for a doctor who accepted Medicare. That was her question. Their only question. I simply asked her why and who was for. And it turns out I was on the phone with her for about an hour. Her and her husband had just moved to the area. They had just moved in her mother-in-law, her father-in-law, two adult developmentally disabled brothers-in-law. Her son had recently been unemployed, so he was living with them and looking for work. And her husband was working. So she was the only one providing care to her family members. I didn't give her the name of the doctor. We were able to talk about the resources in the community, see what things she could access and connect her to those services. And I believe we were able to connect her to some education programs and home support. As far as I know, she's still accessing services through the program. And so that is really what our specialists do, is they're able to kind of pull that out of people. They know what questions to ask and how to ask them and then how to refer people to programs. And what they refer to in-house primarily is our case managers. And so the biggest program is our case management. And so TCARE is the system that we use. It's an assessment tool, and one of the things why I say Washington State is unique is this assessment tool was developed, I want to say 10, 15 years ago out in Wisconsin and shared with several organizations in the country. Washington State chose to implement the program statewide. And so we're the only state currently that has this program throughout the entire state. And this assessment process is unique because it focuses on the caregiver. It does not ask the questions of the person receiving the care. It asks the questions of the person providing the care. And our case managers work very closely with the system. It's part a computer-based algorithm. It's also part of the case management is able to work very closely with this tool to ask the right questions. So what happens in our office is when a case manager is referred a case, they're going to go out to the home or where they're going to meet the caregiver wherever they want to be met, whether it's in the home, whether it's in our office, whether it's in a coffee shop, and they're going to sit down with this assessment. usually takes about an hour, although it can take less or more, and has a lot of questions that are really, very few questions are about physically what the caregiver's providing, it's what the caregiver's feeling. And so the stress burdens, the uplifts, we look at the highs and the lows, we look at the good and the bad to help determine what are they doing, how are they feeling about what are they doing, and how can we help them either maintain that or change that or get that care and support that they need. And our case managers, we have some amazing case managers in our offices, in our multiple offices that really know how to ask those questions the right way and get the right answers. We often have times where caregivers don't give the most correct answers if their loved one's in the room or if they are just having a bad day. So we can ask those questions in multiple different ways to kind of get that really down to what they're needing, what that what their true kind of feelings and needs are for that. After that assessment process is done, our case managers can kind of help them determine which programs and services they might be able to access. So one of them that we offer is one-on-one counseling and support groups. So we, our agency contracts with local counselors. So we have some counselors who are have specialized in dealing with caregivers or their family dynamics. And so they're able to sit down. We can usually offer multiple sessions that caregivers can go access and really sit down on that one-on-one to really kind of deal with what they are dealing with and have that connection and someone to talk with. We also refer to support groups. There are several support groups in the community. I'm going to talk about that a little more later because we do not have any support groups directly through our agency. And that's because there are so many amazing good support groups in the community that we haven't needed to start them because we were able to refer to the ones that were already in the community. Education and training, that is another huge piece of what we do is we have several education opportunities that we share with caregivers. Our specific education, and some people may hear about those in the community, is Powerful Tools for Caregiving is one class that we offer, and that class has a strong focus on self-care. The class was developed out of Portland, out of Legacy Caregiver Services, several years ago, and has grown to be a nationwide program. And I kind of consider it half support for half class. We have a lot of caregivers who really go in and learn, oh, I'm not alone in how I'm feeling and how I'm dealing with providing care to my loved one. Gives them a lot of the skills to kind of take back home to be able to really focus on themselves. Because the biggest focus of the Family Caregiver Support Program is to have people be able to be as independent as long as possible, but also their caregivers so that they don't get burnt out and have to place somebody early. So our Powerful Tools class, we have some amazing facilitators in our community. We'll actually be hearing from one of them next month who facilitates that class for our caregivers. Out of that class, we've actually had a lot of suggestions from caregivers of other education that they've needed. So we had one gentleman who was providing care to his wife and she was starting to need more and more care and he came to our facilitator and he didn't know how to buy soap or broth or buy shampoo or the personal hygiene things that she needed. And so with that and with some other comments from participants, we were able to develop Caring for Your Loved One at Home class, which is more the direct day-to-day skills. So how to transfer somebody safely, how to plan for the future. We have to talk about legal resources and kind of questions to ask and what to look for. So we have one on very much the self-care and one on the actual physical care. And caregivers can take all of those. They can take them together. They can take them separate. We usually try to space them out so people are able to take kind of the whole series. We also have started a class for people with early stage memory loss. So our Staying Connected class is for people who are experiencing early stage memory loss and then their care partners. That one's unique. It doesn't have to be the caregiver, but it is for both of them. So basically a study buddy that you can start to plan for the future. If you have memory loss or your loved one is experiencing memory loss, you can start to plan ahead for what may be coming down the line, if medications are working, the questions to ask your doctor, resources to put in place in the home, if you think you might wander, mix of alarms, things like that. It's really the planning ahead piece for that one. We also have offered yoga classes in the past for our caregivers, where they've been able to come and do some yoga practice as well as get some education. Again, another self-care piece. We also have retreats and conferences. We usually have an educational conference every year. We bring in speakers either locally or nationally to give a lot of education. Again, our focus is often self-care, but also the other resources out there. And we also have had retreats that are very much no education focus, just come in and relax. So last year we had our first retreat out in Battleground where we had art therapy, music therapy, horticulture therapy, and massage therapy. And we had caregivers just come in and relax for the day. We were able to provide some respite for their loved ones at home for those who needed it, and they were just able to come in and forget about everything else and relax and have some fun with other caregivers. And then we also had movie hosting, so any education events really get a lot from the community of what they're asking for, and we develop those as much as we're able to. Another program that we offer is supplies and equipment. This is a smaller program that kind of grows and then goes up and down based on what people are needing. And so when we were able to provide some funding to purchase supplies, to purchase equipment, whatever that caregiver was needing to really make their lives easier, make their journey easier. Primarily, we purchased through this program is the personal emergency alert buttons. So if their loved one is at a risk for falling, there's a safety that they can leave them, and if there's a fall, there's a connection for them. We've also been able to do the emergency alert assistance for the caregiver themselves, because if they were to fall, who would know and come take care of their loved one? So we're able to do that. We often purchase incontinence supplies, because that's one thing that's really hard to get sometimes, and so we can purchase those for someone to use and have, instead of having to go to insurance or having to purchase them quite often, because they can get really expensive. In the past, we've also done transportation assistance. We've had dementia kits, so kind of some education pieces for people. And we've also had other modifications to the home, grab bars, put in, things like that. So it's kind of the program where if something else doesn't quite fit what's needed, we can have a lot of flexibility with what we can purchase with that. We have a lot of options to provide caregivers really, again, what they need. Probably the biggest program that we're known for, and a lot of people hear about in the community, is respite care. And respite care is exactly that, giving someone respite, giving someone a break. Our rule with respite is you can't use it to move work, because it's meant for you to have a break. And so we are able to provide some hours of respite assistance, so either a caregiver to come into the home, to get a paid caregiver to come in from the agency to give someone a break, or to go to an adult day center. There's a couple in Clark County that we contract with, that people can take their loved one to go out somewhere if they want that activity, or they can have someone come into the home. And respite care can be used, like I said, for anything except for to go to work. So if it's where you just really want to take a nap, so you're still in the home, a paid caregiver can come in and help with the laundry, help with some meal preparation. They can also help with personal care assistance. That's what a lot of it is usually used for, is sometimes bathing assistance for the person who's receiving that care, or just really the supervision. You can use it to, like I said, stay home and take a nap, go to the gym, go have lunch with your friends, go to one of our education events. Really, it's whatever you want to use that for that will give you a break. So we have a lot of caregivers who are accessing our services, and so we have a lot that kind of come back to us of, what a lifesaver it's been, and getting that little bit of a break or that little bit of assistance. Being on phones, really, it's just, you talk to me and you can hope that there's somebody out there who can help me. And so we're really fortunate to be able to interact with our caregivers a lot to really hear what works for them. So that's what's available through our organization. We also are, like I said, always adding services, always modifying. But one thing that we really do is connect with what else is in the community. So we have our formal services that we have, but there's also a lot more resources out in the community that we refer people to or that we hear about. So some of those to highlight are support groups. Like I said, we do not have support groups that we sponsor in-house here in Clark County because there's so many. And so a lot of them, there are several Alzheimer's-specific support groups. There's the HOPE support group, which has been in the community for, I want to say, about 4 or 5 years now. It was started because there was a group of people who needed some support, I believe, in a local church, and they have grown extremely. I think they started their first group, and they, I believe this year, just added their 9th or 10th group. They keep it as a small group. It's at many locations in the community, several facilities. It's a weekly support group, and they usually do a little bit of education as well as just talking it out support. So they keep that group pretty small, which is why they have so many. They usually keep it to about 10 participants. That's why they've had to add so many more groups in the community. So that one is dementia-specific, amazing group that they have. There are also a couple groups that are sponsored directly from the Alzheimer's Association. There's two of those in the community. And then there are also other Alzheimer's and dementia support groups that are unique in the fact that those support groups are usually for both the caregiver as well as the person with memory loss. And so they usually usually have that group where they get together and meet and then split out. And so there's a group that goes in one room that are the ones who have memory loss, and then the other half goes in the other room so that they're both able to talk and kind of determine what, talk about what they're going through. So both the people with memory loss and being able to see, my wife is driving me crazy because she thinks I can't do anything and I'm all decrepit and I can't have do anything by myself. And you've got the wife in the other room of, he's so demanding and wants me to do everything. And so hearing both sides of the story. Again, we've got some amazing support group facilitators in the community, so we have to add them. There are also some general caregiver support groups. So CDM Services is a home care agency as well as an adult daycare center. That they have a support group that is really general caregiver support. It is not all center support, dementia specific. Graceful Living is a Graceful Living activity center is a new center that's been open for almost a year now at the Grace Lutheran Church. They have recently started a support group. I believe in November they started that. And again, it's a general caregiver support group. Because that was one thing that the community asked for, is there's a lot of support groups that are for someone with dementia or someone with Parkinson's. What is there for just, I'm caring for somebody with this random condition? And so that group was started to kind of help fill that gap. There are other disease-specific groups. Like I said, there's Parkinson's support groups that are sponsored through the Parkinson's Resources of Oregon. They cover Southwest Washington, so they come up and do those groups. There's one at it's at Touchmark over on the east side of town, and there's some at one of the hospitals as well. And then there's other disease-specific groups. There's stroke support groups, diabetes support groups, there's bereavement and hospice support groups, there's pet loss support groups. You know, when you're a caregiver, you may have a pet, and that's your outlet, and that pet passes away, well, you need to have that really somewhere as well. So caregiver or not, there's those support groups. There's a lot of options out there. Our agency, because we don't offer one internally, we maintain a list of all the support groups in the community. It's ever-changing, so we're always updating that list, but we do have that list that we can provide out to caregivers of what those options are in the community. Currently, I think it's about 4 or 5 pages long. Education, like I said, we have some education programs within our agency, but there's a lot more, and this is growing. Currently, there's a class offered through Clark College Continuing Education. That's on aging parents and caregiving for them. The Veterans Administration has a class called the Savvy Caregiver Series. It's a 12-week class that they offer. The library often has classes and events on the caring for your aging parent or planning for the future, and our caregivers can access that as well. There's several online options. The Alzheimer's Association has a lot of online resources. Classes that you can sit down in your home and just go through and do that. There's also some live message board type classes out there. The Family Caregiver Alliance is a national website that offers classes online as well. And then Oregon Care Partners. Oregon Care Partners is a special program that is very specific to Oregon. I still mention it because they have told us, because it's such a unique program, if you have an Oregon address or you have a loved one who lives in Oregon, you can still access that site. So it is for Oregon residents, but living as close as we do, there's some kind of overlap that we can still use it. So that program has a lot of online classes where they've had some help developed by Tina Stowe, who you'll hear about more next month, and she's a national dementia educator, has helped develop some curriculum with them that's on that. They connect with the Alzheimer's Association classes. It's a lot of great information that they have. We also have a lot off of our website, which is just the helpingelders.org, which is on the brochures and all over the place. There's a lot of links to other programs like the Family Caregiver Alliance. There's a lot of caregiver organizations. That's just one of many that does have those classes, and the library research, a lot of publications that are out there. Some people learn better by learning on their own or sitting back and reading. And so there's a lot of resources there that you can connect to. Other things, they can be respite options. So we have one small program. We're not able to provide all the respite that everybody needs. So there's a lot of other options in the community. There's private pay options, so there's you can contract directly with home care agencies to have caregivers come out. Those caregivers, like I said, have had background checks and screening processes done. You can also work with private individuals. One thing that I always recommend with people is, you know, if you have a loved one, a friend, a family member that you trust that you want to hire to provide care to yourself or provide care to a loved one, that's a choice, and that's a fine choice to make. if you're wanting to kind of advertise and hire somebody, there's a lot of work you need to do. There used to be a caregiver listing of private individuals who had gone through background check screening. Legacy did that. That list doesn't exist anymore. And so there is not a database of just private individuals who have been screened, have been trained, and they're willing to provide care. That doesn't exist anymore. And so we have to be creative to do that. We actually contacted the FBI a few years ago because we had a lot of people asking, how do I get a background check done? Because I want to hire this student that I found in my church, but I know nothing about them. You can do that. Private individuals can contact the FBI and request background checks. So that's a safety thing you can use. There are websites out there. Care.com is one that you often see on the television, the commercials for child care and pet care. They also have adult care and senior care and caregiving. Those services are, there's a fee, you have to pay for those services, but when you use a website like that, they are promising they have done background checks, there has been screening, there have been training. So individuals is not a bad option, it's just one that you actually need to do your work for and really think about how to do that screening. If that's something you want to do, often a lot of people will post advertisements at like Clark College or WSU for nursing students or in local churches, and then do your research on the back end to really make sure it's a safe situation. Agencies, it's easier if they've already done that. And if they care for a sick, they can send out another one. So there's really pros and cons for both, but the options are out there. Also, adult daycare, like I mentioned, we provide some adult daycare through our respite program, but that's also an option that's available to anybody. So as mentioned, these ones, Innovative Services is an adult daycare center, CDM, and then the Graceful Living Activity Center. Graceful Living is not, they don't provide the full care assistance that the other two can provide, bathing assistance, those kind of things, but they do provide activities and resources. And it's a beautiful center if you get a chance to look at it. Short-term facility stays is another one. Virtually every long-term care facility in the community, whether it's a memory care facility, a skilled nursing facility, or an assisted living facility, will do short-term stays. And so a lot of people don't realize that you don't have to be moving in there permanently. You can actually go for, some do have an hourly rate, you can go for a day, you can go overnight. If you're wanting to go on vacation, a lot of caregivers will access some of those facilities for a week or 2 weeks to go out of town and their loved one is in a safe care for a place. Prices vary on that, but it's one that really is just contacting the local facilities. And like I said, virtually all of them have a certain amount of beds set aside for short-term stays. So that's an option that a lot of people maybe don't realize is out there, is that you don't have to move in permanently. If placement is something you're considering for your loved one, it's also a good way to check it out, to check out some facilities if that's something you're interested in, or it's just a way to get that break. Thinking outside the box is something that we really do with our agency. So other things to provide is, you know, what can give anybody a break? And so things that we've kind of referred people to and given them some respite or some support is Meals on Wheels. You know, have meals delivered so that you don't have to cook that day. Or grocery delivery. The Safeway stores, and there's other local stores that will just provide grocery delivery. Sometimes there's a fee, sometimes there's not. Fred Meyer has just instituted that click list at some of their stores where you can shop online and just go pick it up, so you can combine it with a fun drive and you still don't need to open the store and deal with that. Those can give respite for some people if you're a break. Gym memberships, we've had a lot of talks with Parks and Rec and other organizations that a lot of times health insurance, like Medicare programs, will have the Silver Sneakers or the Silver and Hip programs, where one of you may be on that program and your loved one may be on a different program. If you have that, you can actually bring in a loved one for free, usually, with those memberships. And so it's sometimes just another activity to give you both a break. So one of you working out on one machine, one on another one, and you can still keep an eye on somebody, but there's also other people around if something were to happen. That's a way to kind of get just a break for both of you and some activity out there. Other informal support. Biggest conversation I often have on the phones with someone would call and we'd ask if they have a family member or children in the area. Oh yeah, my son lives next door, but he's too busy and would never want to help me out. And usually the son would be calling us saying, my mom needs some help and won't ask me. And so it's one of just kind of encouraging those conversations. There's times where we can make that phone call. You know, if you're not comfortable calling your son, do you mind if I do and ask if he's interested in helping you out? And we can make that connection. And 9 times out of 10, when I call a family member for somebody, they were like, I cannot wait to help them. I have been offering for so long. And so really kind of just asking them again those prodding questions and connecting to what they need access and what may be available for them. Other services that may be available are care management services. There's a lot of private case management agencies that can help do a lot of planning, legal planning for what's coming up, financial planning, or someone to come in and do like the one-on-one counseling or consultation, but they're not an actual counselor. So there's a lot of planning services that can be available there that are for fees. They often will tie in with mediation services. So oftentimes if there's conflict and you've got multiple family members, you know, someone who lives in another state and they're a power of attorney, or you've got another sibling who likes to just come in and cause problems, having that mediation is where you can have everybody kind of in the wheels and a mediator can help facilitate that conversation. So a lot of mediation services. They often advertise other things, but they also will provide family mediation or elder mediation services. That's a resource to access. The Veterans Administration, one very well-known program through the Veterans Administration is the Aid in Attendance program. That's a really amazing program that so many people don't know about. It is a pension program for people who are veterans who served during a time of war, and the dates are all listed when you apply, that they can receive some financial assistance to pay for long-term care. They can use those funds to pay a loved one, they can use those funds to pay for a facility, they can use those to pay for housing modifications if that house is safe for you. There's a lot of funds that can be used there. It's a lengthy application process, but it is a process that where it's just some additional funds to help pay for some of these services. There's also faith and community organizations. We're often caught asking people, do you belong to a church, do you belong to a Rotary Club, a Kiwanis Club, other groups in the community where there's someone who can help you out. There's a lot of informal supports that we really kind of encourage that people can find legal resources. There's a lot of local attorneys who will have workshops or consultations where they can talk with people who have specialized in who's providing care or Medicaid system, things like that. So those are kind of the main resources that we know of. There is more. We have a lot of resources out there in the community that we are always finding and we're always asking. So if there's any resources that anyone's run into, we kindly encourage you to come talk to us and let us know those programs are there. If there's something that is needed, we'd like to have those conversations. As I mentioned, being the advisory council, we really rely on our advisory council members to kind of let us know when they hear about programs that are really needed in the community. That's how our retreat came about, that's how some of our classes came about, and we like to share all that information. That's it for this. Unless you guys have any questions.
Members of the commission, do you have questions? Donna?
I'm not sure my hearing is always the best, so perhaps I don't hear everything you say. But did I understand you to say that their caregiving services you provide are for people who are 18 years of age and older?
Yes. So for our family caregiver support program, it's not limited to seniors. The person providing care as well as the person receiving care need to be over the age of 18.
And then this is a lot of information for one agency. Mm-hmm. Is there such a thing as a hard copy brochure listing all of the services, supportive services in Clark County?
We don't have one brochure that has everything that I mentioned listed. We do have our brochures that I did bring that have the programs and services that we offer. We don't have something that lists all of this because it really depends on the situation. And so internally, what we'd like to do is really have that conversation with somebody to help guide them to those appropriate services. Really, when I was kind of preparing all this stuff today, it was kind of pulling from many other resources. So we do have our resource listing, whereas we do have through our agency the Community Living Connections website, which is all of the resources. Our resource database that does have most of these services listed on there, but it's not just by itself as caregiving resources, it's just community resources that you can access through that. This isn't all listed on them, but it's really in our staff's brains that they can share sometimes too.
Herb?
Yeah, every time you read about aging, they always talk about the tsunami of dementia that's coming at us. You mentioned a dementia kit. What's that?
So we had it piloted in one of our smaller counties that we had, our case managers asked for it because they had a lot of caregivers who were like, what resources are out there? I need some activities. My loved one is driving me crazy. And so the kits that we provided was we really were able to come up with kind of some sensory activities. So kind of there were some toys in there that we found on some Alzheimer's websites and children's toys that we could find of just keeping hands busy and kind of how to go through that. Those kits had, there was usually education pieces in there. It was mostly the hand activities. And so the kits that were kind of occupied. Also things that we talk about with our kids is just other ideas. And so we had some caregivers who actually got together, a group, after taking one of the classes, and they would have kind of their own little meeting in one room and go give their loved ones some laundry to fold. So finding kind of activities, this is one that we had a caregiver who her husband was driving her crazy because every time she folded laundry, he'd unfold it. So finally she just would give him a basket of towels whenever he was all picking on her, getting on her nerves, and he would sit there and fold the towels, and it was an activity for him. So our kits really had things like that as the ideas of other things to do to keep someone occupied, as well as some of the activities and equipment and materials that we could get.
Bill?
Yeah, I may have missed this in your presentation. Are these services income dependent?
No. So that's one that I didn't mention on the our services are not income dependent. It is, we don't care if you make $20 a year or you make $200,000 a year. There are some things like respite, there may be a participation based on your income, but no, talking with our case manager, counseling services, our supplemental services, they are all free services. We don't, none of them are income based. The Medicaid programs is what's income based, but all of our community services are not.
I had a question on T-Care. One of the questions you ask is what the caregiver is feeling, not just what they are doing. What are some of the responses you get when you ask what they're feeling?
The assessment process is they're yes or no or number-based questions. So really, it's there's a depression screening within it. So have your caregiver responsibilities in the past 7 days caused you to feel depressed, caused you to miss out on activities with your friends or family, those kind of questions. And so they're not blank, so we don't get unique answers on that aspect. It's really it's kind of a scale. All of them are different, either A, B, or C, 1, 2, or 3. It's a scale that they go off of. So it's really those kind of questions.
But it provides insight into the emotional or mental burden they may be experiencing.
Yeah, and the way the assessment, it's broken up into several different sections. And so the questions are all asked, and then it's kind of put into the system, and this algorithm comes out and spits out what is there, as well as the conversation with the case manager. So yeah, there's often pieces for the case manager to kind of ask those extra questions and get that extra information, because the assessment tool's not going to pick up every little thing that they're doing, but it's a really good scale of kind of a good starting point of what services may be able to help with those burdens, with those objectives, things like that.
And finding a support group, how does one go about doing that? They contact you and say what it is they're looking for, and then you help them, you provide a list of what's available, and they kind of pick, or?
Yeah, we can do that. So if people are calling just an information and assistance, we can send out a list of support groups. So all of the support groups I mentioned, we do maintain a list just because there are so many out there. Mm-hmm. We don't really recommend one over another. It's really mm-hmm. depending on what they're looking for. So especially with the dementia support groups, the HOPE group is a smaller group. The other groups that are in the community are for the person with dementia as well as the caregiver. So it's really kind of, we always recommend to check them out. So we'll send out the list. Virtually all of the support groups, the facilitators have given us their contact information as well. So I know I often will recommend to people, if you're not sure, call the facilitator ahead of time. One, to confirm that the meeting is happening, and two, to just kind of get some ideas if you feel it's the right fit for you. And I always tell people, if you go to one and you don't like it, try another one, because it just, maybe you need to find the right fit. Same with the counseling services, same with the home care agencies. Try it out, and there's more often than not another one to try out if that one isn't the right fit for you. So yeah, we'll give them that list and help kind of steer them if we have an idea. The disease-specific groups, there's not as many, so there's like two, I think, stroke support groups. One's at Legacy, one's at Peace Health, so it's which one's more convenient for you to go to, really.
Thank you. Bill?
I had sort of two questions. One was, what is that community living website? What's the address?
The Community Living Connections, the best way to access it actually is off our website. If you go to the helpingelders.org website, which here's all our contact information. So if you go to the Helping Elders website, on the things on the left-hand side, you can hit the Find Community Resources, and it takes you straight to that website.
Okay. The other question is, I just had a talk with somebody today who was talking about a mother-in-law who's going to be moving in with issues. Mm-hmm. And it came up, what's the difference between sometimes family caregivers are paid and sometimes they aren't? What is that all about?
It's really a personal situation. So the paid caregivers that I spoke of are primarily people who are receiving Medicaid assistance. And so there are some, which is an income-based, there is a Medicaid program where you qualify for state assistance, you can, and you qualify both financially and functionally, you can have a caregiver come out to the home, an individual provider, home care agency, to provide care to you, and the state pays for that general participation. That's the paid caregivers I talked about. There are also situations where maybe you have a grandchild who, you know, wants to move in with grandma and help provide some support. You can privately pay them. And that's really it's an individual choice. I always recommend in a lot of situations to talk with an attorney or look for resources, especially if there's someone who might be eligible for Medicaid in the future or somebody who has a lot of finances and needs to protect those. The difference when we talk about our programs is unpaid, we have the resources for that. If you are getting paid and it's just you're privately being paid to do that, you qualify as a paid caregiver and wouldn't qualify for our services. So it's really an individual instances on that. There's often times where family members are paid, and you can just do that. There's no set guidelines for that. You can just get paid to provide care to your parent because they're just choosing to pay them. My uncle took care of my grandfather for a long time, and a different uncle was the POA. He chose to pay my younger uncle to provide that care. There was no taxes on that. There was no claiming on that. It was just a choice that they made because he was left his job to provide that care. And so it depends on the family dynamic. It depends on what care you're needing. Every situation is going to be different. And Christina actually just went on and popped up the Community Living Connections website. So this is our resource database. So the database that our information and assistance specialists use. This is the community side. So you can actually go to this website, and it has these separate tabs where explore, find, connect. You can actually go on and create a profile that if you're starting that planning phase of my grandparents are starting to age, I need help, or I'm starting to age and I have no idea where to start. You can actually go online and find either direct resources. You can go in the tab to, you know, pick your zip code and you want to find a housing resource or transportation. You can go in and search for that. Looks like she's popped up transportation resources. So this is the site that you can get to it through our website, where you can plan, you can find resources, you can do a lot on that website.
Yeah. Other questions from commission members? So questions from the audience. Raise your hand. Colette will come to you. Be helpful to us if you provide your name and ask your question.
I'm Martha Wiley, and I just wanted to know, how are you funded? So our programs receive state and federal dollars. We are a state contracted agency, and so we work with DSHS through the Aging and Long-Term Care Support Administration. So our programs are state and federally funded, as well as we do have some grants.
Hi, my name is Shannon Roberts. So my question even has to do with T-Care as well. So what do you do with the answers to the questions concerning emotions? What do you actually do with those?
With the questions?
Yeah.
So the whole assessment.
The answers to the questions.
The answers. So are you talking like confidentiality-wise, or how we use those to determine services?
How do you use those?
Okay. So the whole system, T-Care is a process as well as an actual computer application. And so our case managers will go out and ask, usually they'll take the paper because that's just more comfortable, ask the questions, go in and input them into the system, and then the system kind of works behind the scenes of determining those scores and the algorithm that comes out.
I understand. I'm just saying, okay, so.
Wait a second for the microphone.
I understand.
Go ahead.
The algorithm. So give us an example of what
what would come out. Yes. Oh, so sorry about that. No, so how it comes out is when we get that information out, it gives a score, and we use that score and look at kind of where they fit on, depending if they have high scores or low scores. We have maps that we use, so they're decision maps that TCARE has developed, and those decision maps will give you, based on the algorithm, if somebody is in a position where they are feeling more like a spouse and less like a caregiver, or more like a caregiver and less like a spouse, maybe they need to embrace kind of that caregiving role. And so we'll go through that, and it kind of gives us suggestions of the resources to offer. So we do a consultation. Once we get that assessment, once we get that input in, our case managers will either go back out or we'll go to the phone and say, you know, these are some of the ideas that are that TCARE is saying would be a good resource for you. Is this something you'd be interested in? Would you be interested in accessing counseling services? Would you be interested in attending an education class? And so they sit down with that caregiver and say, this is what the system says may work for you. Is this something you'd like? More often than not, they're going to match up to a certain degree. And so they'll usually offer anywhere from, you know, 2 to 5 services at a time. These managers with that process would go out. They update that care plan, they build a care plan, update that every 6 months, go out every year, do a reassessment to ask those same questions to go through. And so it's that consultation with them to determine these are the suggestions, how do you like these suggestions?
Thank you. Yeah. So a couple of other things that are measured in that TCARE tool is different burdens, and it includes objective burdens. So what are the stressors that are due to the work that caregiver is doing, so the house cleaning and so forth. What is the relationship burden going on between the caregiver and the care receiver, and the generalized stress? And Leslie had already mentioned that they look at identity discrepancy. Like, what is the tension that person feels between who they are as, let's say, the wife versus the caregiver? Because, for example, if the husband always paid the bills and now he doesn't have capacity to pay the bills and you're having to do that, that will create a certain amount of tension. One, if I never pay the bills and I have to figure out how to pay the bills, I'm a little, you know, being stressed out about how to do that. And if that used to be his contribution, his leadership role in the marriage, and then he's no longer able to do that, that will create some tension likely. And how do we deal with that? So that's all of the things that the TCARE tool takes into consideration as it's making that algorithm.
Are the services you provide for people who are permanently incapacitated, or would caregiving related to an injury, which would be considered more of a temporary thing, would that also be covered?
Yes, it could be. Every situation is going to be a case-by-case and dependent, but yeah, if it's a short-term situation where maybe your spouse had a stroke and is needing some care, you're providing that, yes, it could be a temporary situation. That's one of the things with that assessment process is we do that assessment every year. So if it comes to the point where you're not needing the care anymore, you can close out and you won't need to access those services anymore. So yeah, it's not permanently incapacitated. In our services, we have different steps and levels. And so we make do a full assessment and somebody's at the very beginning of the caregiving journey, and really their loved one doesn't need a lot of physical care, doesn't need a lot of supervision, but is starting to need some care. Then, you know, the education and the planning ahead would be available. Not all of our caregivers are accessing respite services and supplemental services, things like that. So it's really, it is case by case. So the answer is yes, we can do both of those in every situation. So.
Other questions? Okay.
My understanding with the Family Caregiver Program, for example, is the funding for this nationally and everything came out of studies that showed such horrible effects for caregivers, and a lot of caregivers dying before the person they were taking care of. Are there studies being done now on the benefits of, like, these wonderful services that you're providing and how it's helping caregivers who are making such a big economic contribution to our society?
Yeah, there's always studies going on. Yes, there have been some studies. One that I mentioned is really kind of the financial piece of saving money out of the Medicaid system, but it's also finding that people are living longer, and one of the things that we really look at is the health goal, and that's why is, you know, caregivers often forget about their own health and don't go to their own doctor's appointments. So yes, there are studies going on. I don't have all of those in front of me, obviously, but the biggest impact that we've seen, especially in Washington, is the savings out of the Medicaid system. And that's what we're finding is people are able to live at home much longer because one, if you have a husband and wife, you know, the wife is able to get that break and burns out much slower and is not like, okay, I'm done, just place them and get them out of my hair. It's able to have a better relationship and a better dynamic so they are able to stay in the home longer, which you find a lot of benefits of. You're much happier if you're in your home rather than having to be placed in a facility or separated from your spouse. There's a lot of facilities where they separate kind of independent living, assisted living, and even like care. So if someone is not able to know who their loved one is, and so yes, having those benefits really, you do see that impact. We get to see that impact just by talking to our caregivers sometimes and hearing that, and we get those stories from them of they're able to live at home longer. More people are able to die at home if they choose to because we're able to provide those services. We can provide our services in conjunction with a lot of other services, and so we may have respite and our caregiving services in at the same time the hospice is out there if it's an end-of-life situation. Or we're able to work with home health if somebody, if there's an injury or a situation where they're getting some home health temporarily from the hospital, we're able to work in conjunction with a lot of those so that we can definitely do that. But yeah, there's studies that are out there. The biggest ones we have is the financial benefits. There's been a lot in that recently.
One last one.
Yeah.
Do you do a lot of referrals to the Veterans Association, to the VA?
Yes, we do. We refer to the Veterans Services Officers all the time. Because really, when I was on the phone, the first question that I would ask is if somebody was a veteran or their spouse was a veteran, because of that program that's very untapped. The aid in attendance was the biggest one that I referred people to, because there's often kind of that window where you're not eligible for Medicaid, but you can't quite afford to privately pay for it. If you need more assistance than what our respite program or something can provide, there is that pot of funds to use, and it was being very underutilized for such a long time that I was asked that question, saying, get connected and see what you can get through there. Because there's other programs besides just aid in attendance, such as being a common one, but that's one of my biggest referrals. And we've had meetings with them and a lot of connections with them to what are you doing, what can you send to me. We have a social worker who's referring to us a lot, and so that was one benefit that we have is we contact the social workers directly. So if somebody was already enrolled in the system, they just needed to go to a social worker, they'd have to start from the beginning. So yes, we take full advantage of the VA and that connection that we use when we can. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not, but we use what we're able to use and connect people there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Under our new business this evening, we discussed in our work sessions some amendments to our bylaws, and we have that draft in front of us as we discussed. Is there a motion regarding those bylaws?
I move. We amend the bylaws.
As discussed?
As discussed.
Mm-hmm. Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed?
Mm-hmm.
The bylaw amendments are approved. A selection committee will be formed shortly after the deadline happens for applications for the vacancies on the Commission on Aging. That deadline is April 14th, and there will be a selection committee following that, and then in May, new members will be announced. Next month, we will be hearing from Shanti Potts about normal aging. So we hope to see you all then. If there's no other business or comments, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.